Welcome to A State of Readiness, a podcast set as a fireside chat with business leaders to discuss what it takes for a company to be in a state of readiness and become a higher performance organization with your host, Joseph Paris. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of State of Readiness, a podcast set as a fireside chat with some of the senior leaders of some of the most respected companies in the world. I'm your host, Joseph Paris, and today our guest is Celine Fallon, who is the Vice President of Business Transformation at Community Brands. Celine's held this position in the technology space, driving large customer engagements and overseeing the governance of strategic programs in both Europe and the U.S. For the past 9 years, she's worked with purpose-driven organizations such as Feeding America and the Make-A-Wish Foundation. Celine currently leads the transformation office at Community Brands. In this role, she is responsible for the strategy and operationalization of operation and organization-wide initiatives such as the integration of newly acquired businesses and the design of standard operating methodologies. Celine's a project management professional, PMP. She has a master's degree in advanced project management from Villanova University, as well as an MBA from the University of Amsterdam. Outside the office, Celine spends every chance she gets outdoors, whether it's hiking, camping, swimming, or sailing. Celine and her husband love to cook and compete in the Spanish paella competition. Paella, I should know that, competition each fall. Over the years, Celine has had a great role, many role models that helped her develop her vision of developing people and her voice as a leader. She enjoys paying it forward by sharing her experience as a woman in technology through mentorships and speaking opportunities. Celine, welcome to the show. It's really great to have you.
Great to be here.
Yeah. So you're from the EU originally, correct?
Yes, I am. Yes. Okay. I'm born in Paris and grew up in the Netherlands.
Grew up in the Netherlands, and now you're in Texas, if I'm not mistaken.
Austin, Texas. Yes.
Austin. I hear a lovely city. I've never been there, but I hear it's really a nice little oasis in the heart of Texas.
It is. It's beautiful in the hill country in central Texas. Absolutely.
So, VP of Business Transformation. Why don't you tell me a little bit about Community Brands first?
Absolutely. So Community Brands is a software company that serves member-based organizations such as associations, private schools, and churches. And we offer software solutions for to meet both their membership needs or their needs to manage their congregants, as well as their educational needs and their fundraising needs.
Now, you know, it's kind of interesting because, you know, when I first think of Community Brands, the first thing that comes to mind is some sort of food thing. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like Kraft or Heinz or something like this. But this is Community Brands is actually a software company that serves constituents, a group of constituents, you know, be it a professional organization or, as you said, congregations or schools. Is that accurate?
That is correct, yes. Right. And there's obviously a variety of needs that they have, specific to whether or not you're a private school or church. But to your point, in the end, we're all trying to bring together constituents in one community and work towards a common goal.
So, you know, tell me a little bit about a day in the life of the VP of Business Transformation.
So the day in the life is very diverse, honestly. Over the last 2 years, we have done over 28 acquisitions to expand our product offering. So as you can imagine, that came with a lot of work and focus on integrating those companies and over time focusing on optimizing our processes and standardizing where we can to better serve our customers.
Now, could you just repeat, because it sounded like a fairly significant number. How many acquisitions over what period of time?
28 acquisitions in 28 months.
Wow, that's a lot of feasting and digesting.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and every single acquisition had obviously their own specifics and nuances and reasons why we wanted to make sure that they became part of our portfolio. So it's been quite the ride and learning journey to work with these great founders in many cases and integrate their offering and be able to function as one company and serve our customers better.
Now, I mean, with that kind of accelerated acquisition rate, I would assume that, you know, we're not talking about, acquisitions of you purchasing Microsoft. You know what I mean? We're talking about smaller companies, I would imagine, with a couple of hundred employees, maybe 1,000 or so.
Yes. Yeah. So we are a total of 3,000 employees at this mm-hmm. time, and we've done acquisitions from the company that I originally came from having 300 employees to as small as 7 employees.
Yeah. So, you know, with small companies like that, they form a culture, corporate culture, and usually that culture is based on the values and mannerisms almost of the founder. And have you had challenges, this is probably a rhetorical question, but have you had challenges integrating corporate cultures?
Honestly, no. There's been a two-pronged approach there. So one is obviously every office has their own culture, even if you're within the same company. So we wanted to really make sure that we protected that culture. So whether or not it's one office having Taco Tuesdays and the other office having a day where all the pets come to the office, we really wanted to make sure that we kept that culture. But then in parallel, our HR team drove an initiative where we identified champions across the different brands, across the different offices that came together and worked on defining what our community brand's culture is. And we've been really successful in rolling that out. So we have our own voices within the different offices and within the different different brands. But in the end, we are one company with one culture and one common goal.
So everybody is wearing the company colors.
Correct.
Good. But they're able to individualize based on, what motivates them. If they have a ping pong table or, pizza Fridays, if you acquired something in New York or Chicago, even though Chicago doesn't really make pizza, New York is the way to go. But, have to throw the flag in there
of
for
course.
New York pizza. So you've allowed them to, have their habits and the things that make them unique and bring joy to their individual offices. But at the same time, everybody is waving the same flag.
Exactly. And then the beauty obviously is as we've come together as organizations, we're not functioning as individual brands anymore. That obviously what initially bringing them together, they were in individual identities.
Yeah.
But at this time where there's task force and there's teams that are working across those legacy brands, if you will, and are serving our association space, for example, or our schools, in the end, whether or not that people came from different backgrounds and different brands, doesn't matter. At this time, they are serving that specific space and our specific customer base and providing the best solutions out there. And there's a lot of cross collaboration there and opportunity really to be stronger together.
Now, I would assume that, since you're in Austin and the headquarters is in St. Petersburg, that as these acquisitions occurred, economies of scales had to take place. I mean, so there had to be some administrative functions that were consolidated, and there probably was some angst with that with personnel. But I would, you didn't make everybody obviously move to St. Petersburg, so you were able to, if they were in Denver, Colorado, or pick a city, you mostly left those operations where they were.
Absolutely, yes, and protecting those cultures. And for example, one acquisition we did, and we brought together and we expanded our events offering. So we brought together three companies that were in the events space, auction. So you can imagine if you go to a silent auction, being able to use the app to actually be able to bid. They had hubs in Chicago and New York, obviously very important areas where a lot of these events and auctions happen. And we wanted to maintain that. We wanted to make sure that we protected that unique culture that was there, and that we were very close to being able to serve our customers.
Very cool. So what are some of the key success requirements or success factors when driving improvements and change? Since you're the VP of business transformation, what do you think some of those, what catches your attention?
So I had to learn early on in my career, being a recovering perfectionist and very type A, that 80 is the new 100 is what I tell my team right now. We can strive for perfection, but we will not be able to accomplish our goals. And as you can imagine, with the amount of work that we've had over the last 2 years, bringing these companies together, better serving our customers, bringing out new products and offerings, we had to make sure that we made incremental took incremental steps and started small and learned from that, reflected on that, and from there decide on what the next steps on our paths were to make sure that we did things right. So that also meant that there were certain things that we just had to stop doing or that just felt to a lower position on our priority list, if you will.
Yeah. So it sounds like you're, I call it the OODA loop, making, synthesizing decisions from incomplete data, but also a mix of agile, if you're familiar with agile.
Yes.
So it sounds like you've almost adopted that you don't have a clear vision of the future, but incrementally you snap it into focus by making step-by-step progress towards that future.
Yeah. And a perfect example is the acquisitions we've done. Obviously, the first time we did an acquisition, it was very different than the last time we did an acquisition. And over time, we learned more. We put a more formal process in place and checklists in place and activities. But that was something we did over time. We didn't sit in a dark room for months putting the best framework together to integrate these companies. We focused on what are the foundations, and let's take the next steps to work towards integrating, and then from there learn, reflect, and incorporate that in our steps and our processes as we move forward.
So, it sounds like you've developed what I'll call a pre-flight checklist, a roadmap, if you will, for these acquisitions. And the first one, of course, you didn't know what you didn't know, right? You had these major muscle movements identified probably. But as you were going along, you discovered things that were missing from from this roadmap, and you started filling in the blanks as you went along, each one evolving from the previous, correct?
Exactly. And in some cases, we knew what we knew, but because of the specifics behind the acquisition or the integration that we've done, as we talked about the share of size of an organization or the product offerings that we had, sometimes we also needed to adjust. So being aware of our surroundings and adjusting the plan in order to accomplish our goal and being nimble in that process was very important.
So as this roadmap has evolved, you don't necessarily on each subsequent acquisition have to check every one of these boxes, because not every box might be relevant to each and every acquisition. You just consider whether or not this should be a consideration and then act or move on as is appropriate.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you at least address it, you recognize it, but you don't say, oh, geez, I got to do that. Even though it doesn't relate, I still have to do it anyway. You just say, it's here. It's not relevant. Check that box off as if it's done, because it is, and then move on.
Exactly.
Cool. And how has your team evolved since you started?
It's honestly, it's been all over the map. So we've had points in time where we, for example, we've implemented seven business applications within 7 months for the first seven acquisitions we've done. As you can imagine, that was a huge undertaking. So we had over 40 people dedicated to driving that, where in some cases, as we were the position and situation we're in now, right now, I have three staff members that are focused on continuous improvements, business analysis, enhancements to our systems, and that have been with me since the beginning. And we're more in an advisory role and in supporting our peers within the different departments, instead of driving and executing on the work that needs to be done standalone as a standalone department.
But you've added team members over the course of time, I would imagine, yes?
Yes, we've added, and in some cases we've subtracted as well where we
Sure.
needed, or in some cases we had staff members that are now part of different organizations, not part of my team, but part of different organizations or in teams within Community Brands.
So what are some of the key activities or efforts that you apply when you're onboarding a new member of your team or just developing your team in general?
What I find really important, whether or not honestly it's within my own team or if I'm starting to interact with new team members within another department, is that we all are rally around a common goal, and we all understand what we're going to be working towards, and create that culture of we're all in this together. This is not me prescribing how you're going to be doing your job moving forward. There's an opportunity for us to work together and define what the best way is for us to do our job and to better serve our customers, to better serve our peers. So an example from a couple years ago is I was working on a large engagement, and it involved over 100 people within our organization, within R&D and services and IT, and lots of dependencies across those teams as well. And there were some struggles and finger pointing that was happening because I can't do my job, or they're not doing their job right. And what I did is I paired up the teams that had those handoff points and had those struggles, and paired them up and told them, let's work on defining what that process needs to be and how we can accomplish that common goal that we've set. And within just a few weeks' time, it was eye-opening to me how quickly we could break those silos and for them to start working on those and defining those common processes and working towards that common goal. And the advantage obviously was that they were able to work together and strengthen that relationship and really connect towards that common goal. But more importantly, it set the stage for a ongoing continuous improvement mindset. And to this day, even though I've stepped back and I'm not actively involved anymore in that engagement, to this day, those teams are following those processes and are continuing to strive to do better every single day and to reach across the aisle and collaborate.
So, last question before we take a break here. How do you maintain that cohesiveness? I mean, it sounds like you have a very open and collaborative environment. I would assume that that is ensured when you're onboarding somebody new. But how do you maintain that level of openness and collaborativeness?
For me, it's all about communication, and I believe I tell my teams I believe in over communication, honestly, and not over communication for the we all have too many meetings, but just making sure that our left hand knows what the right hand's doing. So there's ongoing touch points that I have and that my team has with peers in different departments, just to make sure that we keep the conversation going and we stay in sync on what's important, and to continue to remind ourselves of that common goal that we're wanting to accomplish.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we're going to take a break and be right back. You've been listening to State of Readiness. I'm your host, Joseph Paris, and our guest today is Celine Fallon.
This episode of State of Readiness, sponsored by the Operational Excellence Society, a think tank, a creator and aggregator of knowledge and know-how, serving businesses and professionals who wish to learn more on the various topics which combined comprise the discipline of operational excellence. Learn more at www.opexsociety.org.
Welcome back. This is State of Readiness. I'm your host, Joseph Paris, and our guest today is Celine Fallon, Vice President of Business Transformation at Community Brands. Celine, we've been talking a lot about your role and responsibilities and the inner workings of Community Brands, but, you know, how did you get there? I mean, you know, share with the audience and with myself, you know, your journey. You started in France, you went to the Netherlands, you ended up in Austin. You know, certainly you've had, you know, several you know, career changes, if not geographic changes, over that period of time. So, you know, how did you get into or end up being in business transformation?
Yeah, great question. So I studied business economics, and honestly, in the Netherlands, when you make a decision where you're going to go to school next after high school, I was 17, and my dad said, hey, if you study business economics, you can become a treasurer or a controller. And that sounded pretty cool. But honestly, I didn't really know what I was getting myself into. I liked economics. But I quickly learned that I was more drawn to the process side of things than the numbers side of accounting. So I quickly switched after I completed my business economics degree, quickly switched and had an opportunity to work for the Yellow Pages as a business analyst, and worked on process improvements and standardization of processes, because we had multiple organizations across Europe that we're all trying to accomplish the same thing, and learn from each other. And then over time, I moved from the finance department, if you will, and the more traditional process mapping and process optimization, to work for a CTO. And that CTO was great at coming up with new ideas and initiating. Very bad at actually executing and accomplishing them and rallying people to accomplish those goals. We found ourselves in a partnership because I was good at getting the chaos organized, and I could take those ideas and really bring them to fruition. So that started my career in project management. I've worked in different roles as project manager, internally within IT departments, and then when I moved to Austin to be with my husband, worked with client facing larger programs and initiatives such as Feeding America, Make-A-Wish Foundation. Over time, I felt the need to go back to really being able to make that impact within an organization, and I felt that there was room for me to help drive and accomplish improvements within the organization that could better serve our customer base as a whole. So I find myself in a role as Director of Operational Excellence, overseeing the strategic initiatives and across departments. And in the end, just reflecting back, it's ironic how my background in process analysis and my recovering love for project management are coming together right now in this role. And I have an opportunity to think critically on the way that we do our work and how we can better serve our customers and how we can be more efficient while using the skills I've learned over the years as project manager in how to organize myself and large teams towards a common goal and accomplishing our strategic initiatives and objectives.
So it sounds like you started off with, and I guess I really do have to dial this back just a little bit, you know, Feeding America and Make-A-Wish Foundation, you know, everybody's heard of, but people might not know what the Yellow Pages are.
in a time before Google, if you wanted an auto repair place, there was this book that would be delivered to your house once a year. And in it would be some white pages, which had people's phone numbers and addresses. And then the yellow pages were for businesses and services. So if you wanted a, you know, an auto repair place, you actually had to open up this book, go to auto repair place, and find the auto repair place that might appeal to you. My how times have changed.
Yes, they have. Yes, they have. Yes, sometimes just thinking back, it's crazy. We would be worried and stressed out when we were getting ready to print the books and all the logistics involved in printing. And now, it's all there, and you look it up on your smartphone and you say, give me directions.
amazing, isn't it? It's amazing. Yeah. So you know, but I find it fascinating that you started off number crunching, okay, and you recognized early on that didn't appeal to you. And, you know, you went to processes, which still has a relationship to numbers and engineering. But now, you know, I would suspect that a lot of what you do is, you know, for lack of a better term, psychological, you know, because you're working with people in the processes.
Yeah.
You know, and so was that a natural fit, or was that something that you learned over time? Were you just intuitive that way?
That's a great, great question. And I hadn't really looked at it that way, but it was definitely second nature. And part of that may be because growing up, I spent a lot of time teaching sailing and coaching. So you're working with someone or coaching someone in a new skill. But honestly, my interest has always been in a collaborative approach. As I mentioned, working towards a common goal, and whether or not that's teaching someone how to sail or optimizing a process and seeing that smile on people's face because we're doing things more smarter and more efficiently, or accomplishing a large project that we've been working on for months. In the end, it drills down to working together with the team and striving to accomplish that success.
Awesome. So I think it's time for the speed round. You ready for it?
I am.
All right. So who is the one leader you look up to most and why?
Well, that's a tough question because I've had so many great leaders in my past. But one that resonates with me the most when I find myself in a time where we're going through sludge and we may not be making a lot of progress is a few years back, I listened to an interview with Barack Obama, a podcast, and the interviewer asked the president at the time how he dealt with criticism. And he said that the only thing he does is every day he focuses on making sure he leaves the place better than he found it. So he said it's so easy to only focus on the next step and feel that you're not making enough progress because that goal is still so far and that mountain is still so high to climb. But he really reminded me to make sure to take a look back and reflect and celebrate what we've been able to accomplish. So that's something that I cherish and try to apply on a day-to-day basis.
You know, that last bit there, you know, taking a moment to look back and reflect and celebrate your accomplishments. You know, with there's a lot of time pressure. Everybody feels time pressure. And there's almost like, you know, we're done with this task and we start on the next one. Or this project's done, we start on the next one. And there's no opportunity to take that moment. Or at least we feel that there is no opportunity to take that moment. I don't know if it's because of conditioning, training, corporate culture, whatever it is. But it doesn't take a whole lot of time to just sit back and say, you know, level set against, you know, what did I just do? You know, think about, you know, the sleepless nights, think about the angst, think about the fights, you know, with spouses or coworkers or vendors or whomever. And you accomplish something. But all too often, we just don't level set against what we just did and we move immediately on to the next thing. I think that's invaluable advice. Thanks a lot for that.
Yeah.
So next question here. What's a personal habit that contributes to your success?
So as I mentioned, I'm a recovering project manager and very type A. So I spend an hour every week to plan out my week and to plan out my months, and really formalize my goals and what I want to accomplish and the plan to get there for the week. And what's nice about that is it really allows me to focus when I'm in my meetings or if I'm working towards a common goal, to focus on just that instead of having that nagging voice of don't forget about this and don't forget about that. Because I know it's all on a list somewhere. It's been prioritized. It's been mapped out. So it's really allowed me to focus and remove any unnecessary distractions that I have.
Do you ever find yourself in a situation where, you know, you have this goal, you have this objective, and you're working, but you're not getting any traction, and you're not making any forward progress? You know, no matter, you know, how hard you put on the gas, you just dig yourself in deeper instead of making that progress. What do you do? Do you have any tricks?
Great question. And I think there was a rhetorical question, do you ever? Because obviously I do. Everyone does. I feel that weekly planning session, if you will, allows for that. Like, let's hit pause. Let's think about the larger goal we want to accomplish and what's the best path to go there. And just to use a sailing analogy, if you're not working with the wind and adjust your sails based on your surroundings, you won't be able to accomplish your goal. And I guess I apply that on a day-to-day basis, and especially on that, once a week, allowing myself to take a step back and reflect and then plan my course accordingly and making sure I'm working with the wind and the elements around me instead of against it.
You know, I found myself, the reason I asked that follow-up question is that I found myself, when I was writing my book, I found myself in the doldrums. You know what I mean? You're supposed to write so much. You're supposed to write this much. And it got to a point where there were just words on a page. You know, I would look at the screen and I would look at my notes and I would look at all this stuff and I couldn't synthesize a thought. You know what I mean? It was just like, this lasted for a couple of days. And then I finally said, you know what? I got to check out. I got to put this thing aside for a month. I ended up putting it aside for a month and just, you know, extracting myself completely from it, and then reengaging. And of course, you know, I lost a month on my timeline, but I would have had zero productivity otherwise. So do you ever, you know, have you ever found yourself in that situation?
Yes. I don't think that we always allow ourselves in business to hit pause. But I mean, I feel that way on a very regular basis that, you're not really able to hit and accomplish the goals. And in many times what I do then is just realize it, either take a step back, as you mentioned, or realize that it's time to take a different approach. And I have some great colleagues that all have their experience and expertise. And I would work with them and ask for their perspective and want to understand how they would approach it. And therefore, from there, again, take that step back and allow to adjust course. Instead of just trying to push through. And I think that's why it's so important for me to have that point of reflection once a week in planning, because otherwise to your point, you start focusing so much on the next step and then the next step and writing those pages in your situation, then actually thinking about the best approach and path to accomplish your goal. And it sounds to me like you taking that 1 month off made your book even better than it would have if you would have plowed through.
I don't know better. I mean, it was basically, and I don't want to think that, you know, that month was off. It's not like I took a peyote button and went around the desert. You know what I mean? You know, it was just, I was working on something else. I wasn't working on the book. You know what I mean? Yep. We're all the same in that if we're not working on something else, there's always something else that we can be working on. You know what I mean? It's not like we're just working on this one thing. So with me, I just had to put it down because it just wasn't making any progress anymore. But
yeah.
So what is last speed round question here, even though it's not been that speedy. what's the best piece of advice you've ever received?
The best piece of advice would be to be uncomfortable. And I know Eleanor Roosevelt even quotes it, but I remember very succinctly a conversation I had with a VP of R&D at the time. And he showed me this analysis he had done of our culture for his specific team. And the results said that everyone was very clear on the goals and felt they had all the materials that they needed and that they were set up for success. And I'm like, well, this is great. It's fantastic. All these results are fantastic. And he said, you know what's wrong with this? Everyone's comfortable. And that just opened my eyes. And it reminds me of every day I would try to remind myself that if I haven't done something that's going to make me uncomfortable, then I'm not learning and I'm not growing. And as you can imagine, being working for a software company, if you're not learning, you're not growing. You're not serving your customers.
Yeah. And you'll soon find yourself no longer necessary. Technology changes so often.
Yeah. But it's so easy to go back to what's comfortable and not put yourself out there and be vulnerable. Yeah. But honestly, I think that anyone reflecting on this will have to agree that the moments that you learned the most were probably the hardest moments in your career. So I try to seek those out now.
All right. So one bonus question here. You could take a moment to think about it, but not too much. We'll cut out the dead air if necessary. if you had one do-over, what would it be?
I would say early on in my career, I was running a large CRM implementation, and we had worked our butts off and everything was ready for go live. And the day of go live, I walk into my manager's office, and the director of support's sitting there, and he says, "We're not going to go live. We're not ready." And that made me realize, and I learned in that moment, that I was so focused on the technical side of things and not on the change management aspects and getting people rallied around that goal, that I didn't do justice by the teams. So that would be a do-over. On the other hand, that's something that stuck with me and has been defining in how I work and operate today. But that was a major lesson learned, that I should have spent a lot more time looking around and making sure that everyone that was going to be impacted was part of the journey, instead of just the technical side of getting the CRM in order. And that was eye opening.
Yeah.
At the time, I didn't feel that way. Yeah.
So it's a saying that experience is the toughest teacher. It gives you the test first and then teaches you the lesson later, right?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, Celine, thank you very much for being on the State of Readiness podcast today. It's been a real great pleasure having you. I appreciate you taking the time out of your obviously busy day to spend it with me.
I'm very happy to be here and very much enjoy all your podcasts.
Thank you very much. So thank you very much, Celine. This is Joseph Paris. You've been listening to another episode of State of Readiness. Hope to catch you next time.
Thank you for listening to State of Readiness. You can discover more episodes and learn about the book written by Joseph Paris of the same title at www.state-of-readiness.com. You can learn more about Joseph Paris at www.josephparis.me/card.